Hey guys, Maria Menounos here. Before your favorite TV after show begins, we want to let you know about my new show on SiriusXM Stars Channel 109. It's called Conversations with Maria, and it's live Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Go to conversationswithmaria.com for more info. Buzz you later.
Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening. We have an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro, this is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We're coming in weird because we're going to be talking about not a 100% weird movie, but sort of in the spirit of that it's intended, an off-putting movie.
Yeah.
One that definitely garners discussion. Anomalisa by Charlie Kaufman and Duke Johnson. I have two Charlie Kaufman fans in the form of Jeff Graham.
What's up, guys? Jeff Graham here. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can find me on Twitter at Jeffrey C. Graham and Instagram at Jeffrey Crane Graham. So many Grahams.
And we have Zach Wilson.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. I'm excited to figure out how I felt about this movie.
Yeah.
You can tweet me, Instagram me, all that stuff, that Zach Wilson.
And I'm Phil Svitek. So, let's start with overall impressions. I mean, one of the reasons we chose to do this movie was we understood that not as many people might have seen this movie, mm-hmm. but the people that did, they're in a mind fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after I saw this, I immediately was like, I need to do an anatomy. Not so much like this movie like has like a huge audience and like we need to do one for the posterity of the network, all that. I don't know. I've seen it twice now. I still am not 100% sure if I loved it or didn't like it. Or both simultaneously. Yeah.
What were your pros? What were your cons? Maybe we start there. Just overall.
It's a weird movie. It's weird in that Charlie Kaufman way where it comes in a strange way, but it tells a very human. It's a story of a very human emotion, like mm-hmm. a feeling that I think most people are at least somewhat familiar with, or you can access through like similar things that you've done in your life.
Yeah.
Even if you haven't cheated on your wife in a hotel room while you're like a semi-celebrity in Cincinnati, mm-hmm. you get those feelings of attraction and loneliness. Those are universal, and that's what is on the page here. What I struggle with is this: as the main character is not likable.
Right.
When
all,
you,
yeah.
like, think about it.
Well, he's definitely, when you question, he wrote a self-help book.
I know. It's an interesting dichotomy, but I feel the same way. And, like, I love Charlie Kaufman. Like, Being John Malkovich is in my top three movies. I love Eternal Sunshine. It's funny, I kind of, like, hate Love, Synecdoche, New York, but I still kind of love it. And this movie just, like, left me disappointed. Like, I felt like there wasn't enough for me to even feel strongly if I loved it or hated it. It just kind of, like, happened. And I was like, oh, I guess the movie's over. And I watched it again today, hoping for something more. And I felt the same sense of like, and that sometimes movies will leave you feeling hollow and kind of lonely, and that's on purpose. And I like that. This kind of left me feeling like, oh, I guess that's the movie. Like, not, it's like an intentional sense of loneliness, but like just disappointment.
But I think part of it is, you know, Jeff, you're a very happy-go-lucky guy.
Indeed.
And this is a very depressed man.
Yeah.
One of the things that we could talk about, and, you know, feel free to comment about it as well, because I think it is a pivotal point. Upon first viewing, when you actually realize that every other person is voiced by the same person, because mm-hmm. it is, you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Do you guys remember when you, like, picked up on it?
When he's talking to the wife on the phone.
Same here.
Is when I finally got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was two voices that should be so distinct from each other.
Yeah.
And they're right back to back. I think so. That's probably why everyone came to it at the same point.
Right.
Yeah, and it has a history. Obviously, it started off as a play in 2005. And so, you know, if you're familiar with that, then you bring that to the movie. For me, I just saw that this was out and I was like, oh, let me just go see it because it was not slated on our Anatomy roster. So I was like, you know what? This looks interesting enough. Let me check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't have that history going into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I brought like my, I guess, fandom of Charlie Kaufman with me is like the only real bet. I didn't know anything about the story going in. I knew it was a stop motion piece. I'd heard like the rumors that he'd been working on it for a few years, but I didn't know anything about the story. Going in, which I always like to do, especially with the late in the year, like Oscar contenders, is going in with as little information as possible. But I wanted it to be good because adaptation is one of my favorite movies of all time.
So good.
I think the only movies of his that I haven't seen like several times over are Synecdoche and Confessions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Yeah, I forgot about adaptation until... I mean, I didn't forget about it, but that's also a movie I love. Like, I normally love Charlie Kaufman movies, and I feel like they're normally super risky, and I kind of feel like this movie didn't take a ton of risks in a weird way. Like, obviously, the stop-motion choice is incredibly risky, and, like, that's a production risk, but the script kind of felt a little half-baked to me in a way. I'll be excited to talk about it when we get in there, but I think that was my biggest problem, was the writing didn't feel, like, stakesy, if that makes sense.
Well, my pros are... You know, the fact that it is, you just kind of watch it and it's left for your own interpretation, right? Yeah. It's that very, I mean, you might as well watch it in real time with the very few exceptions that, you know, do you cut time in the entire thing. It's also, to me, if this movie was, it's as close to live action as possible, but with that, if it crossed that border and it was actually live action, I don't think it would have worked.
Agreed.
Because there's that artifice to it in watching it as a stop. Animation.
I think it takes you, the animation was such an interesting, I've never seen anything like this, and I think it's partially, and we'll talk about the production of it later, because it's the 3D printing.
Yeah.
I think it's the first stop motion feature that's been at least widely released that I know of that's used 3D printed puppets. And it gives it this look that feels like it should be in the Uncanny Valley. Mm-hmm. Like, we should be super uncomfortable with this. But it's not. I don't know if it's the lines on the eyes.
When they went close up, you could see kind of the marks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you could see where, like, the structure of the puppets were. And that sort of, like, I guess took you out of it just enough to keep it from feeling uncomfortable in the way that, like, Polar Express was, just too close without being, like, indistinguishable.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, for me, I agree with you that I like that it didn't have that so close to human life, you don't know how to feel about it, but it still felt distinctly creepy to me, which I liked because I feel like that matched tonally, at least to me, what it seemed like the directors were going for. So that was, in terms of choices that were made in the movie, that was by far my favorite choice. I thought it really worked, and that was my favorite part of the movie. I was really impressed by the animation, so that won me over, if that was the only thing that did.
I really liked it too. And in terms of, I also like the color pattern of it because it was very bland,
mm-hmm.
you know, and obviously I think that's deliberate because his life is just that bland.
Yeah.
And the most exciting bit is when he finally like goes down into the basement in his dream sequence when things are taken over and then it becomes hectic. So, I mean, with this movie, it's tough to kind of pick a starting point, in those so ways. But let's start with him as a character and the self-help guru.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I said, it's one of the more ironic things of the entire thing of how is this guy giving any help to anyone else?
Well, I think it comes down to the fact that he's not like just general self-help, like get your life together. He's providing like customer service help. So he's like, this is how you should handle the crazies on the other end of the phone, which for a guy who can't, like, sees everyone as the same, I guess he would have the most experience doing that because he has to do it for every single interaction that he has since he sees them all as bland, nothing people. So I guess he would have the most advice for, like, how to make yourself sound interested when you don't give a shit.
That's a great point, Zach. Yeah, now that I think about it, like, if there were a type of self-help that he would specialize in, it would be, like, the manufactured kind. Where it's like, here's how you fake, like, you're helping someone, or here's how you turn it on for someone to seem like you're engaged. Which I think, if it was actual self-help or, like, authentic human connection, it wouldn't have made sense for the story.
But you know, there's that element of, at least from what I've seen, any kind of self-help person, right? They kind of mimic what they do in that side of life, and they apply it to all aspects of life. And so the fact that on the plane he's so disengaged, and then in the taxi cab he's so disengaged. Everything, he's just so – he just wants to shut everything down, and that's his automatic default.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas, like, everyone's like, oh, hey, there's Michael. He could have been like, how are you? Right. Hey, guys. So, yeah. And Jeff, talk about, because, it is based on the Fregoli delusion in terms of what he's going through.
Right. So we know he's staying at the Hotel Fregoli, which is, like, it's very Kaufman-esque to, like, incorporate some weird psychological disorder into his movies, which makes him interesting. So according to Wikipedia, the Fregoli delusion is a rare disorder in which a person holds a delusional belief that different people are in fact a single person who changes appearance or is in disguise. So essentially, I didn't realize this till my second viewing, which is funny in retrospect, but everyone's face besides Lisa's is exactly the same. It's just their hair and clothes that are changing. Mm-hmm. So I recognize obviously that vocally everyone sounded the same, but visually, like facially, everyone looks the same as well. So clearly Michael is struggling from this disorder.
Yeah, I don't think I noticed it until that last shot with, mm-hmm. like, the group. And it's like, oh, it's creepy now. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, for sure. I noticed it with the little boy. I was like, oh, that's his wife's face. Oh, my gosh. And then it, like, all came together.
Well, at least that one could kind of make sense because it's like, oh, he has the appearance of the wife.
He has your face.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally.
Yeah. So that one could have made more sense. I mean, one of the funny things is I'm realizing it. Like, if Franz Kafka was alive today, he would so be collaborating with Charlie Kaufman on this.
The Kafs. Kafka and Kaufman.
Maybe he's just the same person. Yeah. These names are just a little too similar. The themes are just as hard to understand.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't we kind of also break it down in terms of... Who was your favorite? What was like your favorite moment in terms of his earlier interactions? And it could be post Lisa or before Lisa.
Michael was tough for me. I didn't like him the first time, and I was like, I'm going to watch it again. Maybe his sympathies will grow with me. And I liked him less the second time, and I'll be excited to talk about why.
Let's talk about that because Zach said it, you said it. Mm-hmm. I agree with you guys. Yeah. So, what is the is there a line of empathy that we can kind of go towards? What makes him so weird and unlikable?
We can empathize with the idea of feeling stuck. Mm-hmm. And that's really the big theme here, I think, is that, like, if you feel yourself, like, your life isn't going anywhere, it's not changing, nothing is new anymore, you start looking for little things that can change where you are. And he says as much. I have the quote here, when he's talking to Bella, mm-hmm. I know that I noticed that he says, did you change? Like, he's desperate. Like, did you change while we were together? Did anything change? Because he had this light, like this excitement. But just like anything that you get excited about when it starts, it doesn't. It becomes regular after a while. It's not as exciting as it once was. And that striving for something new and fresh, I think, is something we can all empathize with. His choices and his way of going about that is. Like, he's cheating on his wife and, like, misleading this girl and then behaving like a dick once he gets her. Like, that's why we don't like him.
Right.
But the reason that he is reaching for these things, I think, is something that we can understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just kind of felt like, I was like, okay, I know your life is hard, but, like, it seemed like he kind of hated women. And, like, that was what I was, like... There was not a secure woman in this movie. All the women he gets with are extremely insecure. And, like, the note, and we'll get to this later, but it seems like once the women he's dating develop any kind of self-confidence or self-assurance, that's when he doesn't like them anymore. And I was like, oh, I guess you're a control freak, or, like, It's interesting. It's like once women start to develop their own self-identity, that's when he lumps them in with everyone else's identity. So it's like this kind of weird reversal. And I was like, oh, maybe you're like kind of misogynistic. I just couldn't. I just like Michael even less the second time for that reason.
Well, one of the Bella and Michael moment, you know, because I was teetering at that moment of do I like him, do I not? And then when he basically just solicits her for sex, that's that moment of, oh, you are really just creepy and sad and pathetic.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean,
I hear you too.
Yeah,
though, Zach.
I mean, he, well, no, I mean, this is not to defend his actions.
Yeah, like, yeah. And his
like,
emotions.
Just like what he is feeling is normal. It's what he does with it that's a dick move. I think mm-hmm. I've said that several times today. But,
it's a good point.
Though. Like, and we've all had that, like, that ex that like we want to meet up with, and then like depending on where you are in your life, you're like yearning for what was there in the past, whether it's there or not.
Right.
That's again an emotion we can connect with. It's just what he does with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I mean, yeah. You know, but I would hope like in that regard, you know, what you're speaking about, like an emotion, like there's beyond just sex, like the fact that you know everything that he does with these women always kind of just leads to the bedroom. I mean,
right.
You know, the way he courted Lisa was very fast.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously the only thing that, you know, there's that great line of, like, you're very special or whatever he says. And she's like, why? Well, I don't really know why yet, but it's just obvious. Like, okay. And that may be the case, but you don't really know her that well. The only thing that actually separates her from you is the fact that she has a woman's voice instead of a man's.
Well, that part I actually liked. If you take it in one way, it sounds weird and creepy. But the way that I took it, it's that feeling of infatuation when you meet somebody and you're not even sure, because it's when you first meet somebody you're attracted to. There is a certain amount of like just physical chemistry, whether that's attractiveness or literally down to the hormones and everything. There is sometimes something that's just like, I don't know what it is. I just want to be with this person. I want to be near this person. I want to do things to this person.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's understandable. Like, that's something that people feel.
Mm-hmm.
He moves quickly with it.
Very quickly.
So in my mind, that line was a bit romantic. And that idea that, like, it doesn't even matter. Like, my brain hasn't caught up with what my heart is feeling.
Yeah, I agree. I can see both sides. The fact, though, that Michael clearly preys on insecure women is kind of what bothered me. Because, like, every woman, like, praise. I felt like, yeah, that might be a little aggressive to say praise, but it's kind of true. If you look at his track record, the first girl's like, I've gained some weight. I hope that's okay. Will you still like me? Will you still like me? Then Lisa, every time she says something, she's like, oh, that's so embarrassing. Stupid Lisa, stupid Lisa. And, like, he loves that. And Lisa's roommate is clearly the more confident one. And he's like, no, not you. I want that one. I can sleep with her tonight. Like,
well, I think with Bella, he created that insecurity. When you just run out on somebody, they're going to be looking into every little thing that they've done. Like, was it this thing? Was it this thing?
Yeah.
Was it that weird, like, chip on my tooth that he hate?
Right. That's a good point.
Why did he reject Lisa's roommate? Because, I mean, she would have slept with him equally, just like Lisa. Just the connection is obviously different.
Yeah. Well, I think the hearing the voice is sort of a facsimile for when you see somebody or meet somebody and like you find that one thing that like you just feel an instant connection, and whether it's a shared interest that like, oh, I've never, no one else has ever also liked this thing, or like this person is just very attractive to me at this moment. For him, it's the voice because that's where he is, but that's like, so it was that he, it was like seeing, you see somebody across the room, they could have a very attractive friend next to them at the bar, but if you saw that person, you were like, I like that person for whatever XYZ reasons, his blinders were on at that mm-hmm. point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I don't know if I agree with the tactic either of like, hey, Lisa, you want to go back to my room? You sure you don't want to go with her? No, definitely not.
I mean, that was so, it was awkward in that way that, like, again, like, this was a real life moment. Like, a lot of people have had that moment where you, like, you're out with, like, a group, mm-hmm. and then what people are, like, It's that, like, when you meet, if it's, let's say you're out at a bar or something, and it's two guys, two girls, and you just meet, and you're, like, chatting and everything, when do you make the decision if, like, everybody's having a good time? If people want to go home at the end of the night, how do you tell the other person?
I've seen it go a little bit smoother than that.
I will say, though, to the credit of the movie, it did feel really true to life. Like, every moment was recognizable, except for the crazy fantasy sequence.
Yeah, like, even when his face fell off?
I know, yeah. But that was one thing I kind of liked and disliked about the movie, was it was so true to life that, like, it felt almost too naturalistic for me to feel like I was watching an interesting narrative a little bit. But, like, what you were saying, how that moment happens, and, like, that was true. Like, that felt true. So I liked that.
Yeah, you know, one of the things... So let's talk about kind of... The most awkward thing we'll probably talk about this entire time, the sex scene. I mean,
it
took 6 months for them to make this, and one of the reasons was they wanted to make it realistic and not comedic. And I thought they succeeded, because I was in a theater with 5 other dudes. We were as spread out as possible, and it was the most awkward thing in the world to watch.
See, I had it worse. Like, I saw it with my girlfriend and my mom.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, volume exactly. Turned all the way up, or just like you're slowly like just going volume lower.
With me, just like I'm just going to stare at the screen and not look at anybody else right now.
I actually didn't feel too bothered by it. I mean, it was weird to watch, but it again felt really true. So
but with,
like,
who and where?
Well, I was watching with my roommate.
Guy or girl?
Guy, which might seem weird or not, but I've known him for so long, and he's like a movie guy too. And I don't know. I feel like so many sex scenes in Hollywood feel so manufactured that it was kind of refreshing to see a sex scene where, like, things felt true.
Well, things go, like, wrong, like they do in real life. Like, right. As opposed to, like, you kiss and make out and then music comes on and then you're just at it already. Like, no, it's like there are steps, like, getting clothing off is awkward. You tickle somebody in the wrong way. That happens.
Right.
You're too rough. Like, yeah. You're like, slow down. No, too far.
Yeah.
Like, all that. I mean, that painful awkwardness is rarely put on film. And it's rarely done in real time like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it hurts to watch and it makes it so much more awkward.
Yes, it does.
Especially that shot through her legs of his face, just like...
Just looking up. I don't know why I didn't feel more uncomfortable by it. I don't know.
Here's the thing. I think for you, because you are with a male dude, I think it's less awkward because, mm-hmm. like, you can quote-unquote bro out.
Right.
But if you're, like, with 5 other dudes that you don't know or
right.
with your girlfriend and your mom...
Yeah, I think we could kind of, like, laugh at it and be like, this has been a long time. Like, we had a very open dialogue about it because I've known this guy for 20 years. So, but if I was with a stranger or possibly my girlfriend or my mom, I certainly would have felt uncomfortable. So I hear you.
I mean, it was only like a moment. Like, I mean, it's a movie.
Right.
It's a movie and these are puppets. But it's just like, it's, again, it's hitting that, like, weird place where you're not used to seeing this. You're not used to seeing animated characters, let alone, like, puppets, get this intimate, behave like this. And you're not even used to seeing real people do it. And it because they're that strange, realistic, they almost feel real because of how well-designed they are. It's just it's a strange combination of factors that, like, I don't think that anyone is really completely prepared for it if you don't know it's coming.
Yeah, because it works, you know... at least from how I kind of equate it, it works in two ways. One, you go the Shakespearean route and you know what kind of happens, so you cut away from it. Or you're just a gratuitous movie that just wants to show, you know, nipples.
Yeah.
And you just let it play for a little bit.
Right.
And as Zach said, with just ridiculous music.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. This is kind of, it's not being gratuitous in that way, but it is being purposeful to show you, okay, that, you know, this needed to happen.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it didn't bother me too much.
The interesting thing for that whole, like, motion, like, with his, like, seduction of Lisa, if you will, is, like, I find it's, like, the first time I was definitely, like, rooting for him. I think, like, but this is, like, the
with
big
Bella
question.
With Bella or just Lisa?
I was
with Lisa.
Yeah, I was too.
But it's strange, because, like, you're, like, yeah, these two, it's, like, it's that meet cute. thing. But I'm like, but this is weird and wrong in like several ways. Like the second time when you're just like, when you actually can process and you know where the story is going and where all these characters are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, this is wrong.
I had the same experience, exactly.
Well, part of it is on the phone, you know, the way it's set up, you know, he says to his wife, no, I'm just going to have a quiet night and stay in, you know. It's one of the, had he at least like said, like, I'm just going to go out and drink and this and that. At least he would have been in some way truthful of, you know, him wanting to have a good time. And
He told his wife that knowing, like, he was going to call Bella.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And, like, try to have a thing with her. Yeah. He knew that was happening. It wasn't like, oh, well, I have my wife annoyed me, so I'm going to go cheat on her with my ex-girlfriend. No, he had that plan the instant he just found out he was going to Cincinnati.
Yeah. The only pity I could extend to him, though, is the point you brought up. It's the horror of what life would be like if everyone literally sounded the same. Like, he was trapped. And, like, you could blame that on his own selfishness or blame that on psychology or whatever, but I can extend him a little grace trying to put myself in his shoes and think, like, first off, how horrific would it be if everyone seemed the same? You would be desperate to find some kind of connection. And how much of a miracle would it be to hear another voice? So that was what allowed me to extend him a little grace, even though I still don't like Michael. But
yeah. I mean, again, all of that makes sense. All of that is realistic, not in literal terms mm-hmm. of like, everyone sounds the same, but just when things are dull,
right.
if life is stuck in the same place. If he's done this speech 50 times this year, which like a lot of those kind of speakers do, they just travel around giving the same speech over and over and over again, getting asked the same questions by different people constantly. It's like when you travel... The taxi scene for me, like having driven, like I've spent a lot of time driving for like Uber and Lyft and stuff. So like the taxi driver, like when he starts whistling, I'm just like, oh my God, I feel you, bro. Like, and he like cuts him off, like, please don't do that, basically saying. But those little interactions are all the same. They're all just like uncomfortable and just. How many times do they talk about the weather in like the first 5 minutes of this movie?
Well, and to me, so I mean, for me, you know, I get that the delusion and then that kind of thing is a part of what Michael's actually gone through, and obviously it's very well kind of done. But because I don't know, you know, I can't relate to that specifically. I take that totally out of the viewing experience, and I just look at it like even what is preventing us as just humans having real moments anywhere? Like, why is there that inability to connect on any level? You know, I think we can make, you know, and that's that to me almost that's one of the messages of you can have meaningful interactions with human beings anywhere you go. But it's just dependent on your choice.
It's a choice. Yeah.
I guess like for him and like no one in this room can really speak to this. But like it's sort of like a midlife crisis in a way. Like he says to Bella, it's boring.
Guys, I'm 48. Did you not know that? No, I'm just kidding.
Jeff's got Benjamin Button disease.
I do.
I mean, when we first met Jeff, we thought he was at least 30.
I know. I skew older than I actually am. I'm actually only 12.
Very hairy 12-year-old.
Yeah.
But he says to Bella, it's boring. Everything's boring. So, like, if... Especially with a wife and kid, like, he's fairly locked into what his routine has to be. Like, he has to have this job because this job is how he supports his family. His family is... his son is probably changing very slowly. His son's kind of like a little stuck up. The only interactions we see with him is like, what did you buy me, Dad?
Yeah.
That was the best part.
He's Michael Stone's son, is what that showed me. I was like, oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
This makes sense.
Well,
yeah,
exactly. I mean, he created this child in more ways than one.
Right. And we know he takes his time. I'll stop. Keep going, Zach.
But, like, so I think at this point, like, because he's at, like, what is he, 45, 50?
I was thinking in his 50s what I was thinking.
He's not seeing anything new. Like, he's had all those experiences, and he's having trouble seeing what else is going to happen. Like, is there anything new to experience at this point?
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that's what a midlife crisis looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, we have people like that all the time, even just at AfterBuzz, who, you know, get stuck in kind of their own ways and like, oh, things aren't progressing for me. And
yeah.
It's like, no, let's really take a look at it. Like, just in the past year, you've done X, Y, and Z. So it just depends. Like I said, it's a matter of perspective and all that. And I think that, to me, is what the movie's saying. You know, and it could have gone the other way, where all, at the end, all of a sudden, everyone's voices changes to, you know, what they're supposed to be because he has a breakthrough in his mind. Obviously, wasn't going to happen. Much more sad than that.
Yeah, it makes me start to wonder about Charlie Kaufman. Like,
I know.
Is this how Charlie Kaufman sees the world?
It's funny because he's a fairly amiable guy in interviews. Like, I listened to his Fresh Air interview about this movie and his WTF with Marc Maron interview. And he's, like, a nice guy and, like, doesn't take himself that seriously. He's obviously brilliant. Like, when you hear him talk, you can tell he's kind of a genius. But, like, he doesn't seem like he's, like, crippled with angsty depression.
But that's just it. Just like how Lisa and Emily saw Michael as this brilliant guy who has all these amazing views on the world.
Yeah.
And then, like, he goes home and he's just, like, it's drudgery. Yeah. Everything is just a sludge of trying to move stuff forward.
That's a good point.
And that's part of the thing, you know... It happens a lot with, you know, athletes and kind of anyone in the spotlight, right, with fame, is that fame is so short-lived or whatever. But, you know, and then when you have to, like, all of a sudden go from that, you're top of the world, to something else, mm-hmm. yeah, you're like, wait, I was just being cheered by 10,000 people, and now I'm like, let's, you know, have to go to a grocery store and get, like, you know, green beans for the wife. What the hell is this?
And
that's
Charlie,
why, like, Hurt Locker, right? That's why the last scene of him just going down that shopping aisle is just so sad. He's like, this is so boring for me.
And what's interesting is, like, Charlie Kaufman's first movie is his highest grossing. And, like, Synecdoche, New York grossed a fifth of his budget at the box office. This is his first movie in 7 years since that movie, and it was funded by Kickstarter. So, like, you kind of wonder if there's parallels in that narrative a little bit, too. I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure he's been busy with, like, things that, like, you just don't see his name
What's
on.
Interesting, though, like, he's had three projects pass on. I was reading about this. He wrote this amazing script called Frank or Francis, like, and Jack Black was tied to it, Kate Winslet. It's hilarious. You can read the script online. And
Jack Black and Kate Winslet do Charlie Kaufman.
I know.
It sounds ridiculous and amazing.
I know, and, like, the script is so great. It has, like, the same energy of his old movies, where you're like, oh, this is actually kind of fun. In every studio pass, I think he shot a pilot in everyone's passing. So, like, he's this genius that no one will pay money to go see his work, which would be tough.
I mean, it's hard to, especially, like, his last few films have been so extra weird. It's sort of hard to say this was a guarantee. Like, he's a big name, but he's not a guaranteed success,
right.
Like, commercially.
Yeah.
I mean, most people today aren't.
Yeah.
You know? Used to have back in the day, actors, at least, you know, they could bring in a box office. Now there's no guarantee on anything. But in terms of the Kickstarter, it was interesting, you know, that I think it ended up being about $450,000. And then the production company, you know, came in and gave money. And so it ended up being, you know, they're estimating about $8 million budget, which is, that's, for an animated film, it's fairly low.
Right.
Especially for kind of...
For any film, it's not a lot of money. I mean,
yeah, stop motion. I mean, I guess this is fairly simple, especially in terms of, like, stop motion animation. There wasn't, like, the animation they had was impressive, but there's very few locations. It's a very limited amount of characters, except for a few scenes. So, like, if you look at, like, most stop motion films, like Paranorman. Or, like, Nightmare Before Christmas. Like, those, I mean, generally stop motion.
They have dance numbers.
They have dance numbers. Yeah. They're moving pieces. They're all crazy different, like, sculptures. Everything looks different. They're monsters. Yep. This was probably the 3D printing. I don't have proof of this, but the 3D printing sounds like it probably would save money because it would save time. Because you just print a letter for, like, how they speak, and then you're done. You have that letter, and you can just swap it out. Probably speeds it up. It'd be interesting. I haven't heard any interviews from them about the specific stop motion.
Yeah, I mean, with that, you know, at least you can kind of see it ahead of time. Whereas, you know what I mean? Like, when you're actually having to do it by hand, you have to create each of those things.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, it doesn't work, and you have to obviously check it against what was there before, whereas this you can kind of see in the computer and spit it out.
And actually the reasons you could see the seams in their faces was because it was, like, compartments that they would remove and put on. I'm sure you guys knew that, but normally when they do animation like that, they'll fill in the seams with, like, makeup or clay, and they actually deliberately chose not to, which I think was a cool choice.
I think it was a good choice because, again, like I said earlier, it helped it feel a little... less it helped us feel a little less weird because it was just another step of, like, okay, this isn't real,
right? enhance the artifice.
Kind of. It helped just protect from the uncanny valley, yeah. which is so like Polar Express suffered from.
Creepiest movie ever made.
But it's not. But it's only creepy because your brain doesn't know what to do with it because it's too close to real.
Yeah.
As opposed to just being like, oh, that's a fake character. I can be fine. Like The Incredibles looks very smooth, very good, but it's clearly animation. Right. So you're like, you're not worried about it
for sure. Cool.
Jim Jam in the chat joining us live says it's a 7.3 out of 10. They just saw it 24 hours ago.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Already forgot what happened to Michael.
He died in a horrific car accident.
Well, here's the thing. I'm less, ironically by the end, I'm less interested in terms of what happened to Michael, more interested, you know, with Lisa. Because there's that dichotomy of Bella's letter, and then she has her own letter. And in many ways, she's hopeful of, like, I hope we see each other again, Michael.
Yeah.
And I feel in many ways, her life is just ruined from here on in.
I hope not, but I agree. It was an interesting way to end the movie on her. And I have a fair share of problems with her character, too. I can save them if we want to wait to dive into her.
No. So, I mean, the movie's called
Anomalisa.
That's it.
It's so funny.
Anomaly and Lisa.
I was listening to David Being Cooley's top 10 movies of the year, and he's like, and number two for me, Anomalisa. I was like, clearly you didn't see the movie, because the whole point is that it sounds like anomaly. And that just was interesting to me. My problem with Lisa is that, have you guys heard of this film thing, The Manic Pixie Dream Girl, before?
Yeah. I didn't think of her as a Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
I kind of did, and like, I wanted to like her because she was endearing and kind of sweet, but I felt like, and the movie has a very specific intention with her, but like, she was very insecure and kind, she seemed a little Ruby to me, and it might be because I'm from Ohio, but I was like, not everyone from Ohio is like that, like, uninteresting, and like, she just kind of felt like how someone from LA would think of someone from Ohio, if that makes sense.
That's fair. I mean, I guess that's how we picture, like, people from big cities. Like, I've always been around a big city my entire life. New York, Boston, L.A.
Yeah.
But I guess it's that thought of, like, well, if you're just working at a phone company in the middle of nowhere, like, what do you have to do with you? What do you do with yourself? Like, what extra education do you have, or that you didn't have for XYZ reasons that you never went to – you would never – went to a higher education, to college or anything like that. That like got you into just doing phone calls all day.
And like Akron's a little bit more of a middle class city than like Cincinnati or Cleveland. Yeah. So that was, I think it made sense, but maybe it was just being someone from Ohio. I was like, oh, of course she'd be characterized this way.
Yeah,
like,
but I didn't see her as Manic Pixie Dream Girl because that's like, she's not a dream. This girl, Lisa's not a dream girl.
Yeah, that's true.
And the Manic Pixie Dream Girl is like Ramona Flowers from Scott Pilgrim or Zooey Deschanel from New Girl.
Ever.
Like, just like that. Yeah, Zooey Deschanel in anything.
Always, yeah.
That, like, ridiculous, like, always peppy, like, always doing something weird, like polka dots, all that. Like, Lisa was just insecure.
Yeah.
Like, she was clearly, like, she could have been a happy person, but, like, just stuff never went her way.
Yeah.
And, like, insecurity is because of the scar. And we don't know where that came from. I thought it was very interesting that of the placement. It was a scar on the seam.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. I wonder if there's any symbolic.
Do you guys think there's anything to that? Like, that was that intentional?
I mean, I thought it was an easy thing to pull off. And that's why it was slightly weird, because they did leave it in some portions, and that's why I was trying to figure out, wait, what about her is so, like, off-putting?
Uh-huh.
Because they kept saying, oh, don't look at me, don't look at
me. I know.
And it was like, looking at what? You seem overall the same in terms of structure.
Maybe it's, everyone like, else. The idea that her damages are actually what are humanizing her, which is interesting, because, like, it erases the seam. So it's like, her past and her scars are actually kind of what makes her human a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, that's just true. That's true of anyone. You don't want that. Like, the perfect person is usually a terrible person.
Yeah.
Michael. like, that. Michael was, like, Lisa's perfect person. And then, like, you meet them and, no, they're terrible.
Yeah.
But she's got real human flaws that make her approachable and also just relatable. Because everyone has felt insecure at some point in their life about something.
I like Lisa more now that we're talking about her.
I mean, Lisa. She's just like, she's one victim of Michael.
Yeah.
And they're probably, they're kind of similar in this way, right? They both end up here. She and they're both hopeful in that way, right? He hopes that even though this is a work thing, he hopes that he can kind of rekindle something with whoever it ends up being. And you know, she's there on vacation, so not for work, but hoping that she can make a connection, you know, and she's not, you know, she didn't expect this to happen, but even if just by seeing him on stage, she can have like some sort of connection and hope gain something from that experience. Mm-hmm. So they're overall very similar with slight differences.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she leaves the movie like with that letter that she's writing him. I think she leaves it like in a, like she's changed for the better. Like she's going to move forward with her life with more confidence mm-hmm. than she's had. Like weirdly, I think that's sort of the only good outcome of this story is that like she had a change for the better because somebody, even for a night, like somebody loved her and yeah. she can move forward with that with knowing that there is something it's about
terrible
her
message.
It's not a good, it's not,
I
like
love
a,
your
good,
reading,
it's not
though.
A great thing, but it does like, but it will help her. I think other than where she just felt like she was secondary, like everyone always wants Emily. Mm-hmm. It's that feeling of being stuck that a lot of people have sometimes if they have like friends that are more popular than them
yeah.
or something like that. Like, why would you want me? This other person is right here. And now suddenly she can say to herself, but at least one time I was the more attractive option. Hmm. And so I can find somebody else who feels the same way.
But I'm just surprised her with the fact that she didn't eventually go the route of, wow, this guy is crazy. Because he has a meltdown on stage.
Yeah.
You know, he's, you know, it's up to her whether she interprets, like, the whole let's get married as crazy. But then eventually he's like, okay, stop talking. Don't do
yeah,
this.
I know.
Oh, my God. Punch
you're
him
terrible.
In the face.
Ugh.
And he says to her, you're being a little controlling.
It was so
as
gross.
He tells her how to eat food.
And he was, the thing was, he was chewing with his mouth full. And, like, he was calling her out for that. And I was like, you are gross.
I didn't even notice that he was doing it, too.
Yeah, I was like, ugh. And that's the moment when he saw her as the same as everyone else. He's like, oh, shoot, I can't control her anymore.
Because she's not the dream anymore.
Yeah.
In that moment, she becomes, like, all those flaws are like, oh, but, like, my perfect person is flawed, which is another thing that we tell ourselves. Like,
right.
My perfect person doesn't have to be perfect in the eyes of the world, but, like, they have to be what you picture as perfect. With, like, all these little things that, like, people have quirks that annoy you
yeah.
in any relationship. Oh, you left a dirty sock on my pillow. Like, that stuff happens, but if that's going to blow up your view of somebody, like, yeah, you're a jackass.
Right. I blame Michael. Like, yeah, that's a good point
yeah.
that, like, his view of her was compromised. But it's like, if that's your standard, then F you. Like, you're going to be lonely your whole life.
Let's just say he's searching for something that's not there.
Yeah.
I mean, part
yeah.
of it to me was, if in his mind, there was the realization as he was saying, you know, let's get married and stuff like that, you know, whether conscious or not, of that I'm going to spend the rest of my life with this woman. And it's going to lead to exactly the same thing. So it's
yeah.
it's almost like a chicken and the egg syndrome mm-hmm. of like, okay, what came first? The fact that she is actually like that or that you're making her like that?
That's a good point.
Because I'm sure, you know, I would have been interested to kind of see the wife a little bit more and what led to that. Because I'm sure she wasn't always this boring to him.
Right.
Yeah, but we can see in the little
Give
time that
day.
We see with her that she's, like, clearly, like, trying. Like,
yeah.
she's clearly, like, a good person. She cares about her husband. She throws him a surprise party.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I got all your friends together. And, like, it's a nice thing. And he's just like, ugh. Although I will say, after a long trip, sometimes you do not want to be confronted with a lot of people.
Right.
Yes, I would agree with you there, except his scenario is way different.
Yeah.
You know, he just hates people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moral of the story, Michael hates people. I think that's the movie. He hates imperfect people, so he hates people. It's kind of what it comes down to.
Indeed. Let's see. Do you guys want to start moving into some of the technical stuff? I know we kind of sprinkled it a little bit throughout.
I mean, unless you guys had any other thoughts on the story itself or the characters. Oh, well, we got to talk about the dream sequence.
Yeah. We can't leave that untouched.
I get the message, like, with the whole, because it's meant to drive home the point that, like, he thinks all of these people are
the same.
Not just, like, they sound the same,
but that they are the same person, that it's like a unified being, mm-hmm. that like, and the selfishness that he thinks he's the center, he's the right. only real person out there, and then he found Lisa, the only other real person.
Very self-obsessed.
Yeah.
Is it one of those things that, you know, what turns him off from other people is the fact that they, you know, they're sucking his soul, that they want something from him? I mean, as the guy says, like, you know, Michael, let's basically have sex. Yeah. You know, I want you, and it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
This left turn so, right there. I was like, whoa, this movie's taking an interesting turn.
Yes, you know, so it almost feels like to him he's being just used, and so he doesn't want any part of it. Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, everywhere he goes, it's like, oh, there's Michael Stone. Oh, my God, there's Michael Stone. Michael Stone. And so to him it's off-putting, and it'd be interesting, again, just to read about his history, like, when this started happening. Like, maybe he was a great self-help person, and then he got fame, and this kicked in. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
But. The whole face falling off thing, I had trouble kind of wrapping my, like, narrative logic brain around. Like, I was trying to figure out why that choice. It was interesting, and it looked crazy. It freaked me out, honestly, watching it. But I kind of wondered if you guys had any thoughts as to, like, why.
Well, we saw two moments with something weird with the mouth. Mm-hmm. It was then, and then also in the mirror, mm-hmm. when it's, like, starts twitching.
I didn't catch that. I'll have to go back.
Yeah, and then when he first gets into the room, he goes into the bathroom, and he's, like, staring in the mirror, and then his face just starts twitching. I would have to, like, do some crazy comparison. I imagine it's twitching between his face and the standard other face.
Oh.
I don't know that that's true. It moves so quickly, I wouldn't be able to tell. But I think it's that, like, the voice is the only is the thing that makes him different from everyone else. It's like the only thing he has, in theory.
Oh, that's a good point.
So losing his mouth is losing that piece of him. Mm-hmm. I thought when I first watched it, that moment, I thought, like, whoa, this movie just took a turn.
Yeah.
And I was actually kind of excited for that turn.
A thing is happening.
We're going to be
plot.
Like, I don't mind small movies that, like, take place very very simple, like, setting and everything, but I really enjoy, like, crazy sci-fi fantasy stuff. So I thought it was about to go in this crazy other direction for a moment, and then he wakes up, and it's like, okay. And then my brain starts going, wait, so what did that mean?
Right, I know.
But yeah, I mean, that's how I took it, mm-hmm. at least.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Phil?
Yeah, I mean, it reminded me of The Matrix a little bit when Neo has his mouth in that way. I mean, yeah, as Zach pointed out, it's just kind of an extension of that. You lose your voice, mm-hmm. you know?
Makes sense.
And so, you know, in even that realm, he can't even then fight off against people, right? So going back to the scene with the taxi cab person, you know, that mundane boringness, he can't even throw that off. He would just be forced to listen.
Yeah.
And that's almost even worse.
That's his personal hell.
Yeah.
Just listening, silent.
Yeah, he can't do anything about it. And all he can do is at that point just run away, but... As the dream flight, they'll come after him.
Yeah. The one really subtle touch I liked about this movie, I don't know if you guys caught this, the only other person with a different voice, did you guys catch who that was? It was the sex doll at the end. She sings, and it's actually a woman's voice. And I was like, oh, you do hate women. Like, only when they're an object that you can completely control do they have a different voice. And it's the last voice you hear before they cut to Anomalisa, it's her singing. I was like, oh, I see. It's not the other voice. It's a woman's voice because she's a doll.
I didn't notice that. I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because I was like, why else is the sex doll there? And I was like, oh, I guess it's to make us hate Michael more.
It is.
Well, it's also that he's a terrible father. The fact that he goes to the adult shop and it's not enough to be like, okay, oops, I went into the wrong one. You know what? That could be a okay toy for my son.
It's like either just extreme laziness or...
Yeah.
I don't know what. Yeah. Maybe it was just like, I'll show him what women are. Like.
It's not even like it was like... If the rest of the chest had been broken off, like, I would have been like, okay, well, it's just like a weird talking, like... Asian doll now, but no, it's got an exposed nipple. You're giving this to your to a 5-year-old?
So weird.
5, 6.
You could be open and like honest with like kids with like sex and all that. But like what?
Yeah. And then, but again, like, I think it's different.
I wanted to know where the semen was coming out of.
Oh, I...
Because, yeah. She's like, what is that coming out of it? Not, first of all, the wife acknowledges that it's probably semen and then does nothing about it. Like, doesn't tell the kid, don't touch it, or...
They're raising a little Michael Stone in that very home.
It's like, that is about the last substance that you should be, like, just leaving around.
Yeah.
Leaving around a small child who will, like, probably eat crayons, so what is he going to do with this thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, dear Lord.
This movie.
He doesn't know any better.
Right. I thought that was actually a pretty insightful touch, though. I was like, oh, I guess there was some intention behind the sex doll, and it kind of made the movie make sense to me, actually. Which I thought that was a good addition.
The voice thing, mm-hmm. you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, it's interesting thought. Like, I hadn't, it's new, it's a good thought. I hadn't noticed that.
Let me ask you this, in terms of, because we opened up with girls just want to have fun, even though it was in Italian. What do you guys think of the choice to use, because they wanted to use My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion. They couldn't get the rights to that. So then they go with Girls Just Want to Have Fun. What's the meaning there? Is there any meaning besides that it's just a fun pop song?
The way I took it is that it was the idea that, like, a fun pop, like a nothing pop song with, like, no meaning to it.
Right.
Could sound beautiful in the right person's voice.
Mm-hmm.
That was how I took it.
I like that reading a lot, and I wish I would have taken it that way. And this is, again, kind of my problems with Lisa. She has a moment where she's like, oh, this is my favorite song. She's like, I just want to be the one who walks in the sun. So I love, like, your interpretation of, like, she's making meaning out of something pointless. But my interpretation was, I was like, oh, this is your favorite song. Like, you are kind of a sad person.
You don't like the Beatles?
I know. I was like, you... And, like, she was speaking so earnestly about, like, loving the lyrics. And I was like, like, you're kind of a rube. And it made me sad because I wanted to love Lisa. But I was like, I think... It seems
you understand,
to me,
Jeff, people can have their own opinions about their favorite songs.
I know.
You shouldn't be so judgmental against...
I'm not trying to be. I just felt like I was being directed into feeling that. And I don't know. Like, I felt like the choice was to make her seem kind of... Like,
you understand if we listed the songs you listen to here...
I know, that's fair.
You wouldn't be that far off.
But they're not my favorite songs. I just felt like that... To me, that moment was in there to make us be like, oh, Lisa is kind of this small, basic girl that Michael wants her to be. Like, had she have, like, had a sophisticated choice, I wonder if Michael would have started to, like, fear her a bit.
He does sort of have that, again, like, he thinks he must think he's rescuing her in a way.
I know.
Like, when he tells her to come out to L.A. and all that.
Right.
And so I think there's, like, an aspect, like, he does see her as special, but I think there is definitely... an aspect of, I am the savior here.
Right,
I will save you from your small town Akron life.
Right. Yeah, he views her as a bit of a child, I think, and he liked, it's sort of that weird, like, daddy issues thing, I think, that he was into. That's a different point to bring up. Maybe not so much daddy issues, but she was very childlike, and I agree with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the irony, as a child to take care of at home, who he gives no cares about whatsoever.
It's, you can't let him think it's his fault. But it is.
It so is.
Well, don't tell him that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Anything else that we might have missed in terms of the actual plot that we want to discuss before we move into fully the technical side of things?
It was a well-structured movie, I thought. That's just general, but it was, like, very clean. I like that it was short.
It could have been a lot shorter. It could have been only 40 minutes.
I know.
That was the original intention.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, they wanted to do it as a short film movie. I mean, 80 minutes, yeah. Here's the thing. It didn't feel like it. Like, you're watching it in real time. So, again, we're used to just such a faster pace of things.
Right.
And especially even in animation, the ones that we brought. Like, take Nightmare Before Christmas. Like, there's a song every probably 4 minutes. And so there's that hyperness to it. This... just slow. Like, the fact that we need to start on a different airplane and then zoom out to him in the airplane? No.
Yeah.
Probably not. But it again, to me, it's just that artifice that makes it work. And, you know, it just gets your mind thinking, because pretty much, I mean, the irony is you can stay ahead of the plot overall, mm-hmm. and then just at the moments when you think you have it, it switches those gears.
Yeah, agreed. I wasn't ever bored. I thought I would have been. Normally in movies like this, I sometimes do get bored, but I wasn't. So that's credit to the movie, I'd say. Even if I was frustrated, I wasn't bored.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's engaging, mm-hmm. Whatever else you have to say about it.
Let's talk about, in terms of comparing it to other Charlie Kaufman films, we kind of throw it out, we've thrown it out a little bit, but where would you put this one in his work, whether a writer or now director?
I barely remember Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So I would sort of have to like take that one out of just like out of my list for that. But the only one I would put it, I might put it above, is Synecdoche.
Yeah, same here.
Only because like I came out of this at least like understanding everything, and like in a sense, and like you'd never understand everything about a Charlie Kaufman movie, but it did feel like I got what was going on enough that like I connected to it more.
Yeah, the funny thing for me is I agree. I think these Synecdoche and this are my bottom two. But with Synecdoche, I felt like it was so big and at least like took so many risks that even though I felt angry after I watched it, I was like, well, there like it was a big failure to me. Whereas with this movie, it like the moment you talked about when his face fell off, I was like, oh, here we go. Like, here's the weird Charlie Kaufman that like I love and gets me excited. Because in every movie, something crazy happens. Like an adaptation, yeah. They're all of a sudden acting the third act of the movie. And like in Being John Malkovich, the premise is that they're inside John Malkovich. Like, I love that. And this was such a slice of life that there wasn't enough for me to get excited about or disappointed about. It was just like, oh, okay.
Well, I think that's nice. It deepens his portfolio mm-hmm. in a way. Of
yeah.
Like his list of films. Like, this is a different movie than, like, Eternal Sunshine mm-hmm. or Being John Malkovich or Adaptation, which are so high concept
right.
that they are inaccessible in a different way.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, it's a nice piece to his oeuvre, but it left me bored.
I mean, like I said, Adaptation, one of my all-time favorites. Eternal Sunshine yeah. would probably be my number two, but only slightly edging out Being John Malkovich, yeah. which is also brilliant. And then, what was the other one? Being,
what are we forgetting about?
There's another Being Something movie.
Not yeah. Being, Human Nature, I'm thinking
oh,
of.
Yeah.
Got
Human
it.
Nature.
Which being
is,
Human
which
Nature.
Is weird. I want to say Being Human, like, that's not right. That's a TV show.
Yes, it is.
Very different.
This also wasn't quite as funny as... it was funnier the second time I watched it, but normally I find his movies very funny. And this was lacked some of the humor that I usually really like in his films.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I also, Zach brought up, this is probably more for the guy in a midlife crisis,
mm-hmm.
you know, who can find that very, very sad and sadistic humor in all
yeah.
of this.
Sort of like This Is 40. For yeah. Judd Apatow, I didn't personally connect to it because it was like I had no role in that movie.
Right.
But like my parents really liked it. My younger sister really liked it because she connected with the two little girls.
Yeah.
It just like I didn't have a role. I didn't was seeing myself in any part of the movie.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's interesting enough. What Don Draper was to Mad Men, I mean, in some ways, you can kind of compare him to Michael. Because they're both in, you know, they think of, anyway.
No, I hear
you've seen that.
They're pretty broken people.
They're pretty broken people. They try to sleep with women.
Right.
They're both alcoholics for the most part.
Yeah.
They try to stay away from their wives.
And Don Draper is just a little more interesting to me. Michael, I wish he had a bit more of that, like, something that makes Don Draper compelling. It was hard for me to, like, feel anything towards Michael besides just, like, ugh.
Well, part of it is, you know, we never really see his success, right? So if the one thing that he has is the seminar, the self-help thing, I mean, he blows it out. Like, he just starts talking nonsense
crazy
on stage. And you're like, oh, I thought at least this would be his moment of brilliance.
Because
we see him preparing the speech, which in itself showed insecurity in that way because, you know, I mean, yes, anytime you go on stage, you kind of rehearse and things like that, but he felt, to me, not too confident about going into it and seemed generic too
mm-hmm.
in terms of what he was giving.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know how I was supposed to read that scene. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to see Michael growing or shrinking. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he really grew at all by, yeah. like, from beginning to end of the movie. He's sort of back where he was.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't sure if that scene was supposed to represent a potential landmark for him or just the same old Michael. But I'm not sure it really matters because he eventually regresses anyway. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's life.
Yeah.
You know, one of the big nominations for this movie is the Oscars for Animated Movie. It's the first R-rated movie to be nominated in that category. Do we think it could win?
No.
No?
Sadly. I don't think
not a question of deserving, because I was personally not a big fan of Inside Out.
Yeah.
I didn't get around to seeing The Good Dinosaur.
Is that even nominated? Is it?
It was nominated for...
I forget.
Not the Oscar.
No, it was nominated for the Producers Guild Awards, and I can't remember if they were.
Yeah, here's the thing. Whoa. If Peanuts wasn't nominated for an Oscar, or The Good Dinosaur wasn't nominated for an Oscar, that I can safely say.
I think
I'll find out right now.
I can't imagine with the way critics reacted to Inside Out that Inside Out would not win the Oscar. Yeah, but I could see Anomalisa being a surprise.
I mean, here's the thing. You got Shaun the Sheep. I don't think that's gonna... Like, that's a fun movie, but to call it the best animation over Inside Out...
Oh, The Good Dinosaur was not nominated.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Ooh.
What else was there?
We had Shaun the Sheep, as you said. When Marnie Was Out There, which I'm not familiar with.
Less people have probably seen that than this movie.
That's the first time I've heard of this movie.
Boy and the World.
Yeah, I don't remember that one either.
And then Inside Out and Anomalisa. Inside Out, obviously the favorite.
Yeah.
Just because of Pixar. I had like weird problems that no other like individual person has with that movie. The logic of it, whole other topic.
Oh, interesting. I would love to.
Not a topic for right now.
Not right now, but we'll have that discussion, Zach.
Can you imagine what is inside of Michael's head? That would have been a fun movie to, like, a crossover make.
It's like
a
Being John Malkovich, like, combined with Inside
Being
Out.
Being Anomalisa Out.
Yeah, that would be fun.
I don't want to see the emotions in Michael's head. They're just like all hating each other.
They all look identical.
Okay, for those of you who've seen Inside Out, and hopefully this doesn't spoil it, so cover your ears. But I think, you know, in Inside Out where Joy gets she gets lost in the abyss.
Uh-huh.
I think that's what happened to Michael, and just sadness is driving his entire personality.
Yeah, you're right.
I think this fully makes sense now.
There it is.
All right. Yeah.
There you go.
That's what would have happened had they not rescued Joy.
And everyone looks the same. That's an awesome point. I love that connection.
Oh my god.
That's great.
So there you go.
I don't think it'll win, though. I think Inside Out... I predict Inside Out to win that category.
Yeah, just like in terms of how the audience... How the Academy tends to vote. It would be a stretch.
Yeah.
A big stretch for this to...
But the good news is I do think it's deserving. I mean, you know... to be honest, I don't know why Shaun the Sheep is on there. It's a fun movie, as I said, but, you know. I think overall we've hit everything, and even in terms of the mechanics of things. I mean, music-wise, I thought the soundtrack was good. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought it accentuated to it.
I did notice the music playing at the hotel, in the Fregoli Hotel, and the song that Lisa first sings when Michael asks her to sing in the restaurant were the ending credits song, too. So that song recurs three times. I didn't notice that until I watched it the second time, but it's kind of interesting.
Comedy rule of thirds.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
So, also, fun fact, the song that the geisha doll sings is called Momotaro. Hmm. And it tells the story of a boy sent from heaven who journeys with a dog, a monkey, and a pheasant to battle demons on a distant island.
Hmm. Would love to try to see a connection there, but I'm straining.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those... Here's the thing. Sometimes people just try to have so much meaning in everything. It could have just been a fun song.
I'm sure, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, any last thoughts before we head out?
Interesting trivia. For every minute of the movie, it took the animators a week of production time.
That is very short.
It's short?
For a stop motion, that's pretty quick.
Oh, there you go. That blew my mind.
Yeah, I have some friends that do stop motion. Yeah, it takes
forever. Like, I know a guy who, I mean, he does it by himself, but he was working on a 30-second animated short for, like, 3 months.
Yeah.
And that was just, like, two characters in a void. It takes a while.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, I thought the movie did look beautiful. There were some shots that I honestly thought, like, that's... There was one shot, like, post-coital, where we see the window and we see the skyline, and there's this, is that called rack focus when it, like... Yeah. I don't know much about. I thought it, like, looked just as beautiful as any shot in any, like... The movie kind of reminded me of Lost in Translation a little bit, even in theme. And there were some really beautiful skyline shots of Japan that I thought, like, these rivaled, honestly, a couple times.
Okay.
So, fair props enough to the animators.
I like the touch of... I'm going to give... I liked the moments, the additions of just even the kid masturbating. Just... You're like, what?
Wait, when was this?
Oh, the guy across the way. And I thought that was a guy in an office. Is that a kid?
Or what? You? Yeah, guy in the office, yes.
Okay. I was thinking of his son, and I was like, did I see the same movie as you guys? Did the sex doll mean that much to the kid?
we saw a bonus ending. It's like Marvel.
Yeah, that was the post-credits.
If only. I would have liked the movie more if that were true. I don't know.
That's a weird thing to say, Jeff.
That might be a weird thing to say, but it at least would have been like that crazy Charlie Kaufman choice where you're like, this is something crazy. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't have said that on camera and on a podcast that's going to get nationally released.
Well, nationally? We are international. That's true. Comedy.
These people in Brazil are going to be like, fire that guy.
All right. I think we should start that out on that note. But I did, you know, one of the things that Zach wanted, you know, we wanted to come up with our own minds of, did we like this movie and have we learned anything? So through this process, Socratic or not, did we come to a better understanding?
Yes, I think I definitely, like, have a better idea of the movie. I still don't think I would say I enjoyed it, but it was a good movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think, for me, I think it's supposed to be an experience, and it's not supposed to leave you in a good place.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's very intentional.
Yeah, I am still disappointed, but that's because the bar was just set too high for me because I'm like a Kaufman fanatic. I hope this isn't the end of Charlie Kaufman. I don't think it will be.
No.
I just know it's been tough for him to get work made. So I hope... I like Charlie Kaufman a lot, and I'm not going to let this movie ruin my reverence of him as a writer. So.
Yeah. I mean, if we have one thing to say to the audience that might be listening is go pay for this movie.
Yeah.
Buy it on DVD if it's not in theaters near you, like... The more you pay for it, the more likely we're going to get more of this.
Yeah.
Because it's, especially independent movies, which Charlie Kaufman's movies will always be, just because, like, a studio can't. Won't put their money on him because it's such, like, a huge gamble with such a weird writer. And I imagine he doesn't like working with studios.
No.
But support the filmmakers here by supporting the movie itself.
Preach.
I agree, 100%. And I mean, it's a great time. Again, the fact that it got started through Kickstarter, you know, I mean, you have Spike Lee, his movie got made through Kickstarter. So it's, you know, it's a great time to be a filmmaker. And so, but it requires participation on everyone's behalf. So on that note, don't be Michael, please. If there's anything to this, do not be Michael. And again, I say that. You know, if you have this Fregoli delusion, I have sympathy for you. But for me, I don't relate. You know, I don't understand that side of it, so I never looked at the movie in that way. So just don't be that. where can the people follow you one more time?
Don't be.
Thanks again for tuning in, guys. I'm on Twitter at Jeffrey C. Graham and Instagram at Jeffrey Crane Graham.
You guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson, at a bunch of after shows over on our sister network, AfterBuzz TV, and occasionally you can hear me over on Marvel Movie News as the voice of Doom.
That's right. And don't tune out just yet. You know, I do want to say thank you guys for joining us. We really appreciate it. If, you know, just comment below. Let us know what your opinions are on this movie. There's a small coalition of us, and that's why I think the more we stick together, the more we can gain out of this movie. And we're going to be doing other Anatomy movies. So keep tuning back in. And on Popcorn Talk, we've got a roster of many, many shows. As Zach mentioned, Marvel Movie News is one of them. DC Movie News, Jedi Alliance, and so on and so forth. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll be back next time. Bye for now.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.